Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Walk Your Talk with Leanne on Life Coach Radio Network. I am so privileged that you have chosen to spend an hour with us today on this beautiful February morning. You know, I am a life and leadership empowerment coach, and I have been so incredibly busy in my world here in Los Alamos, New Mexico, preparing my new coaching office, preparing my conference room, and getting ready for a huge grand opening and ribbon cutting next week that, you know, I just am in so much in awe of the amazing privilege that we have in this country to speak and live the lives that we were created to live. And I have a huge heart for each one of you that are tuning in today. I am joined by an amazing guest, and I'm going to be having her introduce herself here in just a moment. But I want to share with you a little bit about my radio show and why I do what I do. I am the Walk Your Talk Coach. I am the CEO of La Dolce Vita Coaching, and I really empower people to live the legacy today that they want to leave for tomorrow. A lot of my focus is assisting and walking shoulder to shoulder with those women whose lives have been affected and touched by the heart of adoption. I've created an heirloom coaching process that really allows each family member touched by the heart of adoption to establish and recognize the missing threads within their story and put them all together, kind of weave them back into a tapestry of beauty, grace, forgiveness, and healing. And it is my privilege to be joined today by Rebecca Valle. Welcome, Rebecca, to Walk Your Talk with Leanne.
Thanks so much for having me today.
Absolutely, and thank you so much for being here. You know, you and I have gotten acquainted very closely here this last couple of weeks as we have been chatting, and I also had the privilege of spending time with you on your radio program, Adoption Perspective.
Right.
And I have come to love you, your mission, your vision, and your heart for the adoption world, and very, very grateful that the Lord has seen to it to knit our hearts together and kind of weave our stories and our mission and our love for this community together in a way that brings us to this place of being on air together on Walk Your Talk with Leanne. And I just want to give our callers an opportunity, if they would like to call in and speak with either you, Rebecca, or myself, a phone number. So I'm going to go ahead and take that opportunity right now. Listeners, if you would like to call in and ask either Rebecca or myself a question, please feel free to do so. The number is 646-716-9397. So thanks for your patience, Rebecca, while I gave that little commercial announcement. You know, as we have shared in the past, Rebecca, we've talked about the life of the adoptee. We've talked about grief. We've talked about loss. We've talked about some of those missing threads that can come in and surprise us and really, you know, kind of throw a boomerang into our day or into our life within this tapestry of adoption. And I would like it if you could share just a little bit with our audience today what, you know, what part of the tapestry in this lovely fabric of adoption do you hold?
Wow, that's a tricky question. Well, first of all, I want to thank you, like I said, for having me on today, and we are absolutely kindred spirits. I love what you're doing, and I don't think that adoptive parents can be successful adoptive parents unless they really understand the heart of an adoptee. And I think you've just done an amazing job teaching me and making me more aware of the ins and outs of the way my kids' hearts beat. And I think that's essential for me to be able to love them and love them well. So, gosh, what part I play? Well, I'm an adoptive mom. My husband and I have been married for over 21 years, and he has the patience of Job. Shout out to my husband, Michael. And we were both teachers and really had an idea of what our lives would look like. And I was teaching fourth grade and sixth grade, and really thought that after our wedding, we would teach for a couple years, and then we'd have kids, and those kids, you know, I'd teach part-time during that time and still be able to come into school. And, you know, I had this whole kind of fantasy future that I full-heartedly anticipated. You know, as a believer, I really believe that's what God was going to, you know, lay before us. And so when we went through infertility in the late 90s, completely broadsided by it at, you know, you think about a 28-year-old woman who all of a sudden we're being told we won't have or probably won't have biological children. We were just really taken aback. And it was definitely one of the hardest times in my life. I think my husband would agree. You know, we just struggled in our marriage. We struggled with our faith. We struggled with our friends. We struggled with our family. We figured it was just like everything, you know, in this sinkhole of infertility. And I really don't think unless you have walked that path, you really understand the complexities of that loss. And just like I don't think that I understand the complexities of loss for an adoptee. So, you know, I think that that path and that that difficulty really was life-changing for us. We decided that we were going to go ahead and adopt after doing some procedures that we were pretty much told wouldn't work, but we thought, well, God might show up with a miracle, and he did, but in a way that we never imagined. So we now have three kids. We went through three infant adoptions, and we brought my daughter home in 1998, and she is now almost 16, which I can't believe it. And she really, you know, we have a bond that is pretty strong, as considering that she's really, you know, when I became a mom, and I have immense love for her birth parents, and that's been a whole other journey over the last 16 years. And then we have two boys. My son is almost 14 next week, and then we have another son who's 12. So we really went through really three infant adoptions in under 4 years, and it was life-changing and amazing and the beginning of a journey we just hadn't seen coming.
Wow, that's quite a story. And what, you know, what's really coming up for me, I mean, I love that. And I'm thinking about, you know, here you and your husband are, you're in your 20s, you're both teaching school. So you have this incredible love for children already and giving back to this world, and then to get the news of infertility. That must have been a pretty big deal for you. Like you said,
yeah,
you know,
huge.
Your marriage, your faith, your family, the struggles that can come with that infertility piece. And, you know, that's a lot of times that's not an issue that adoptees or people within the tapestry of adoption are even willing to admit or talk about, that that was a struggle, right?
Yeah.
That they,
I don't hold that back. Yeah, I don't know how you deal with all of this. And over the years, it was not until we brought home, I think all three of our kids were home when I realized, you know, you can fill the crib, but it doesn't fill that hole in your heart if you've never dealt with the loss of your fertility with your husband. And so we really had to back up and deal with a lot of loss. And I think when that's not handled, it absolutely, I'll use the word pollutes for lack of a better word, but it pollutes that relationship and open adoption and semi-open adoption where you are mutually loving a child if you haven't grieved the loss of your biological child. And in understanding that need to grieve for us as a couple, it allows me to come alongside my kids as they grieve their biological parents. And we all lost in this. You know, the birth parents lost, my kids lost, we lost. Like, people say, oh, it's a win-win-win. It's awesome. Adoption's awesome. And I'm like, you know, really it's based on a lose-lose-lose. And I think that there's healing in that and beauty in that, but you have to bring that into the light to allow for healing.
Wow, Rebecca. And so how, now that you've walked this for over 16 years, that's a pretty big deal. You have, right, you've got three kiddos at home. You've walked this adoption journey for 16 years. You worked with your husband on really, you know, working through the grief and loss, like you said, of your own biological children. That's a lot of, it sounds like you did a lot of work.
Yeah, it was hard.
I mean, you didn't
it was hard. Well, and I think it wouldn't have happened, but what has happened as our journey's continued as we brought our kids home is that we went through two very distinct hospital experiences with our kids. And so when we brought our daughter home, we spent time in the hospital with the nursing staff and the doctors, and they were just so empowering and positive towards us and kind, and we just were so blessed by how that played out for us. We were going to be there for 48 hours with this dear couple, you know, who are 22 and 24 and have chosen us to parent their daughter, you know, basically saying, you're who we want to be when we grow up, and we're just not in the place to be able to take care of her. And it was just, it was beautiful. It was something that, you know, you would, there'd be videos on YouTube about it now, you know, this beautiful mm-hmm. arrangement. And then with our son, we met his birth mom when she was just 7 weeks pregnant. And it was by very cool divine orchestration that we met her, and she was a senior in high school and just really felt like she wasn't in a place to parent, but she also had a lot of people pushing her towards terminating her pregnancy. And she said, no, I'm gonna do adoption. And so she chose us very early in her pregnancy, and we did the whole pregnancy together. It was just, she's an amazing woman. She's now she's finished nursing school, and she does home health care, and she's just this a phenomenal woman. Here we are, you know, almost, well, 12 and a half years later. But we went through all the coaching, the childbirth coaching classes and baby showers together, and we were just very bonded, and we knew that she may choose to parent or she could still place with us, and we just really had the prayer that we didn't know what our role was supposed to be, but that God was going to use us in her life. It was just so divinely crafted that we connected with her, and my husband and I were very adamant through the whole time that we didn't know whether or not we were in her life to parent this child or whether to support her as she parented. And so we were very palms up throughout the process, but she was very adamant that, you know, this was our little boy, and she felt at peace with that. And but then we got to the hospital, and we'd had such a glorious experience at the last hospital. We just thought this is going to be the same. And it was just awful. It was awkward, and the staff, it felt uncomfortable, and they didn't know quite what to do with us. And I was her, you know, right-hand woman. And so they kept, who are you? I'm sorry. Because she kept diverting questions to me. And they're like, well, why are we asking her? And it was just, it was really difficult. And there were even pivotal times where we were, you know, we were allowed to be with our son, and then other times nurses would come in and say, no, you need to go, I'm not okay with this. And so these shift changes would happen, and it was really this aha moment to realize there was not a consistent training for any of these nurses. Like, they didn't have any background about openness, and again, this was 12 years ago, so it was relatively still, you know, new in the birthplace scenario. Some of them were very supportive, some of them were very against it, some of them welcomed us, some of them thought we should leave. And so that's really when God really laid on my heart that there needed to be support people for these families in the hospital. And so over the last 8 years working at Parker Adventist Hospital here in Colorado, we've created this family-to-family adoption support program that is in the hospital with trained nurses understanding loss and caring for our patients, you know, in a neutral, compassionate way, and helping the adoptive family make sense of what their role is. And it's in all those conversations, though, over the last 8 years that I really have seen the importance of dealing with your grief, addressing issues that are underlying your behavior, and making sure that there's resources available, and really just hearing the heart of those that have been involved in adoption. And that's really what started our Adoption Perspectives radio show, was that I was hearing from all these people. I was hearing from adoptees, and I was hearing from birth parents, and I was hearing from adoptive parents, and I thought, I'm learning so much. And it's doing such a work on my heart that I would love to be able to share that. And so when I was approached about doing a radio show, it just couldn't have been better timing. I thought, oh, absolutely, Lord, if you're in this, and we're going to do this. And it's just been a huge blessing to be able to help other people hear from others' perspectives so they can find healing and help others in their healing.
Wow. And what an incredible ministry it sounds like that you have up there. I am so looking forward to coming up to Parker Hospital next month and meeting you.
I love it.
And seeing what you've got going up there. You know, you talked about, and the name of your radio show, you know, Adoption Perspectives. Mm-hmm. And so, Rebecca, I would love it if you could share with me and with our listeners this morning about, it sounds like you've learned a lot in these last 16 years, and especially these last 8, as you have been really ministering to families. How different today, like on this February morning, is your perspective and your view on adoption? How different is it now than it was, say, 16, 17 years ago?
Oh, it's a 180. It's completely different. I think that I've confessed many times on my radio show, which people can actually listen to archives on YouTube. We have an Adoption Perspectives channel on YouTube that they can listen to some of our past shows, and including Leanne's, by the way. I didn't understand the complexities of adoption, and I didn't understand the loss, and I really thought of it, and I see it sometimes with adoptive families I work with now, as more of a means to an end. And I joke at times that I was just all about filling the crib. And, you know, the sad thing is that we think that having a baby in our home will heal our hearts. And as I mentioned, filling the crib and filling the hole in my heart from my own infertility, those were two different things. And how unfair to bring a child into my life with a job. You know, like, you need to fill this space and this hole in our hearts and my nursery and all of that, without really understanding the nuances of the loss to the birth parents and the loss to my child. And so, I've learned all this because I've been so amazingly blessed to have people that have shared with me and taught me and talked with me, like Sherry Eldridge is one that I interview quite a bit on Adoption Perspectives. And as an adoptee, she's just shared her heart with me. And there's times that we'll be talking and she'll say, well, you know, your son's probably thinking this, or your daughter might be thinking this. And I'm like, oh, I would not have caught that. Thank you. I will follow up and make sure they didn't, you know, mistake what I was saying when I said this, or, you know, understanding that filter. So I think that's probably the biggest difference, is just thinking that I could adopt these children in my home and that I would then just kind of step into society as this family and that everything would be the same. That, you know, I look at my life now and I look at some of the families that have started out on the parenthood path with me, and our lives are very different. I mean, what we focus on and what the time that we spend and what it looks like for us as a family versus them as a family. And I really had to accept that as far as being an adoptive parent, but our life is going to look different, and it's going to be rich, and it's going to be amazing, and it's not bad, it's just different. I think that's a huge thing for adoptive families to understand, that with these kiddos that have gone through early trauma of losing their first family, their life ends up playing out different if you're willing to allow the kids' needs to drive it.
Wow. Yeah, the kids' needs to drive it. That is really huge. And, you know, a lot of people today, Rebecca, think that because adoptions are open now, or more open, I don't even know what the percentage is. Is it over 80% now of the adoptions that are done? Is it about that? Yeah, are open now. And back in the 60s when I was adopted, and, you know, prior to that when Sherry was adopted, and these different, you know, sisters that we have in this arena, it's a very different world now, but yet the same issues kind of go on, the same thoughts that adoptees have. You know, we think it's going to be a lot easier with an open adoption.
Absolutely.
And in some ways, right, in some ways it really is. There are some things that maybe are a little more gentle on the journey than they were for those of us who walked through a closed adoption, but the grief and loss is still the same. And kudos to you for really having the courage and the tenacity and just the real transparency and openness to accept and seek out counsel on your journey and really being open to see the needs of the child and to have the courage to see the needs of you and your husband. You know, that keeps coming up for me for some reason, maybe because it's Valentine's Day here coming up next week, you know, and thinking about relationships and thinking about a husband and wife together. You know, you're the first adoptive mom that I have had the privilege of having on my show, and to hear your heart and your perspective, your love and your commitment to your marriage as well as to your kiddos, just really touches the very depth of my soul and my heart on your willingness to set aside and, well, not even to set aside. First, you were able to look and see what was really going on with you, right? And then as far as your own grief and loss issues, and then how your husband played into that, and then how that would carry on into how you would parent your kiddos that were soon to be joining your family. And that takes an incredible amount of courage. And it sounds like you're really, really walking into this with your eyes wide open and your heart open. I love your phrase when you said, my palms are up. I just really see a release and a relinquishment of control in that area. Because I can imagine when you were new in the process, getting ready to receive your first daughter into your home, that you were like, oh, I kind of got this figured out. I'm a school teacher. I kind of get kids after all. I get it.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's so funny when you said that about our marriage, because it's interesting when I look at my kids, what I didn't understand was early trauma. And, you know, 16 years ago, we didn't talk about the trauma that our kids experience. And Julie Alvarado is someone here in Denver. She has Coaching for Life, and she's just taught me so much about that loss on that day of birth. And there's so much focus for us as adoptive parents that, oh, my gosh, she's home. And, like, I kind of joke about the YouTube videos, let us show you their joy, you know. And the bottom line is that kid is terrified because everything they know is gone. And I didn't understand that. I remember Julie telling me on my show at one point, you know, they even lost the gait of her walk. You know, as I'm walking my daughter and trying to calm her, I have a different gait in my walk as the woman that carried her. And so nothing is still familiar to my children. And so not understanding that, and I love one of the things Julie also says, is we can't parent kids in a traditional way that came to us in a non-traditional manner. And these kids have gone through early trauma. And so all the quote-unquote, my little bunny ears I'm doing here with no one watching me, my traditional ways of parenting or my consequence-based classroom or my charts and stickers, like all that stuff doesn't work with our kids because they have gone through early trauma and they need a relationship first. And knowing that they have gone through, their brains are, they've developed differently, they have a different trigger mechanism than kind of the traditional kiddo. So it looks very different in our house. And as two classroom teachers, with all of our, you know, savvy, we had to throw all of that out. And we really didn't have a choice. Like, we really found that traditional parenting, traditional consequences, all of that is so fear-based. And with kids that have a fear trigger because of early loss, it doesn't work. And so, you know, I remember coming home and telling Mike, I've done all my Heather Forbes reading and Brian Post and all these people that really helped me understand that. And he was like, well, that's crazy. You know, that made no sense, but he watched that it worked, that this concept of time out my kid with my kids didn't change behavior, but time in with them did, and pulling them close to me and talking about what it was that triggered them, that's what works. And so then he was like, okay, you might be onto something because the behavior is getting better and it is getting better and relationship is building in our home. But we had to be willing to learn and to change what our thinking was about our children, all based on what happened to them on their birthday when they came into our arms.
Wow, absolutely. And being willing to learn is a huge piece of that. Because, you know, I think oftentimes what can happen, whether we are a bio mom or an adoptive mom, we have a lot of pride walking into it, and it's hard for us. Oh, my gosh, it's so hard for us to just step aside and say, you know what, I don't have all the answers. And, you know, really seeking out the help that you needed via reading, talking to people, you know, that sets pride aside, it set your ego aside. And it probably was pretty challenging for you. I can imagine it would be a little bit scary to really embrace that whole thing, well, I don't have all the answers for this kiddo, because God's called me to parent and to adopt these kids and to build my family this way. Therefore, he's going to give me what I need. And that's something I think that comes up for a lot of people, is they just think that supernaturally they're going to get everything that they need. When oftentimes we have a very difficult time as moms getting out of our own way to even receive, let alone what God wants to give us, you know, whether it's through, you know, supernatural divine inspiration through the Holy Spirit, or whether it's the people that he's put into our lives to really help walk us through this journey.
Right. Well, and the lies that fill your head too, because you have that idea, you already feel like you couldn't have a biological child, and now you're failing this child that you do have. So you have the tapes that play, like, well, maybe you should never have been a mom. You know, what are you doing? And it's very humbling. And what we know about these kids as well is that, you know, whether foster care, international adoption, whatnot, man, in their loss and their triggers, they're really good at finding ours. And so we owe it to our kids to be able to say, okay, what was it about that exchange that triggered me? Why am I so upset? What did my child just show me that I need? If I'm expecting them to find healing, then I need to stop and ask myself when I have that response that's off the charts to say, okay, wait, and prayerfully, like, Lord, okay, what was that about? You know, and he's faithful. He shows us the yuck that needs to be dug out, and that's a gift our kids can give us if we're willing to allow them to, and almost partnership in that healing, because that's what's going to build the lifelong relationship with these kids.
Absolutely, because you really want to build bridges with your kiddos and not walls. And oftentimes with the secrets or the expectations or the desires, or like you said, fill in the crib, that everything that can come up with, and then even the kiddos' response to their parents of thinking, wow, I have to perform in a certain way, or I have to show up in a certain way because I'm afraid of rejection again or abandonment or
right. All
those different things that can come up for the kids, that when we start learning how to build the bridges and not the walls in these relationships, then for it goes on for eternity, that continual curiosity of getting to know each other. Because so often we think that we should just have it, when in reality is, you know, it's a great privilege that we have been given to build a family, right, and to have input and love and acceptance into another human being's life, that this can't be taken lightly, and to walk into it with such a dignity that you're communicating to us today, Rebecca, it takes a lot of courage, it takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of selfless love, and I'm hearing a lot of real honest love coming out of you as well as your kids, and when you model that to them, they're in turn getting that confidence and the courage to model it or to bring it back to the table with you, because they're seeing it come out in your life.
Yeah, and that's really what we want. I think that is a beauty to the semi-open and the open adoptions, as far as knowing the parents of these children. You know, the fact that for the most part, you know, obviously there's six there. We've met four of the six birth parents. You know, mm-hmm. knowing what are they good at? How can I foster that in my children? You know, not that, you know, my husband, you know, is a theater guy, and so we're going to have bio kids that are going to do theater. You know, like, it's not, they're not put in our lives to fit what we would have wanted with our bio kids. It's about knowing how they're wired and what they're good at and what gifts they come in with. And they're in our home to be themselves, not to fulfill that now you're my daughter, you're my son, so you must do X, Y, Z because that's my dream. You know, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. And if we try that, it's an ongoing battle. We know adoptees already feel like they're not enough. You know, they already have the tapes that, you know, maybe if they had been enough, they'd still be with their parents. So we know they have that insecurity anyway. And then we try to put on kind of this role of daughter or son on them. You will do this because we do it. And then it's an ongoing battle. I think that's why we see a lot of distance from adoptees pulling away from adoptive families that aren't willing to facilitate that gift that child came in with, or the wiring that child came in with, knowing we get the honor of having a snapshot of that with these birth parents and their involvement in their life.
Wow, that's really huge. You know, having that privilege. You know, I know for me, I met my biological family when I was 25. And so, you know, I've been in reunion with them and learning more about my own story, my own tapestry, you know, kind of how they did things.
Mm-hmm.
And in my adoptive family, you know, this is kind of how the Mosiers did it. You know, this is
mm-hmm.
what we did. And
sure.
This was our family, you know, our family framework. This is the lens that we use to view it. And when it was a closed adoption, now I came from a family with four adoptive kiddos, and they were all closed adoptions. And so what a really different, beautiful perspective that you can bring even into my world, Rebecca, letting me see this open piece and about how it has influenced the way you parent and how your kiddos view their lives. It sounds, you know, just from talking with you that there is maybe perhaps more of a sense of wholeness in your little tapestry, if you will, with the adoption piece, being as you can communicate and you can see someone who reflects your kiddos' lives back to you.
Yeah, I hope so. And I think going into this, and you asked how my vision has changed and how my thought process has changed, I was really bad at this in the beginning. And I've confessed that multiple times on my radio show that, you know, this concept of openness, I was so broken in our infertility and did not want to deal with that, that having the birth parents involved in my kids' lives was really hard because it was that constant reminder. I hadn't dealt with my loss of not being a bio mom. And so having this woman especially or even birth father or whatever involved in their lives put salt in that wound. So since I wasn't willing to do that, I would push and push and push away this concept of what ultimately is best for my children. And so now we don't have ongoing contact with many of our birth parents, and it breaks my heart because I know a lot of that was about my own wounding, not what was best for my kids. So now that I'm in this position of, you know, working at the hospital and meeting these adoptive families at the very beginning and being able to explain to them, you know, especially, you know, in Colorado we have agencies involved and the parents for the most part come in pretty well trained and understanding the mindset around openness and the benefits and whatnot. We'll have couples that fly in from out of state and they're just like, okay, I'm here to pick up the baby and I'm out of here. And I'm like, whoa, okay, let's slow down here a little bit. You know, have you talked with her, get to know her, you know, the ins and outs. And we're going to do, you know, fingerprints for Forever Fingerprints, which is a book that Sherry Eldridge wrote. And we give those keepsakes to them. And, you know, we're really trying to get them to back out of the situation that's right there that's all about coming in and getting that baby and heading out and being like, wait, stop. You know, this, you can't ever go back to this moment. And it's really not all about you leaving with that car seat full. This is an ongoing, hopefully an ongoing lifelong relationship you're going to have. And had I had that experience on day one, would things look different in my family? I think they would, because I didn't have anyone saying, this is worth you putting as a priority, and I didn't get it when I needed to. And so that makes me very passionate about trying to educate families up front to the needs their kids will have when they are 15, 13, and 12 to make sure that they have all the pieces they need and we don't throw off pieces, you know, because it's too uncomfortable for us.
Right. Wow, that is so well said, and I would love it if we could spend the remaining portion of our time together today talking more about adoption perspectives, the family-to-family issue, and agenda that you have up there and your process that you go through for the families. I would love it if you could educate each one of us more about that. I want to take just a moment before we go into that, Rebecca, and I have one question for you. Before we jump into that I want you to think about while I do a little commercial break here and let our listeners know about some upcoming shows. But I would like to know, if you are willing to share with us, I'm kind of springing this on you, what was your trigger that allowed you the courage to step into your own healing? So I'll give you some time to think about that, breathe on it. You can decide if you want to answer that for us live on Walk Through Talk with Leanne here in just a moment. And I do, you know, release you from any obligation. But that question came up for me, so I will.
Yeah, no worries.
Okay, cool. So, listeners, thank you again for joining Walk Through Talk with Leanne on Life Coach Radio Network. We are a group of over 40 coaches who come together on a daily basis to share life coaching with you, leadership coaching, business, and many different types of restoration coaching here on Life Coach Radio Network. We have three channels that you can find us on here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Life Coach Radio Networks, which you are listening to me on right now. We also have the Life Coach Chat channel, where several of us coaches get together and talk about relevant issues that are facing the world today and offer free life coaching there as well. We also have International Life Coach Radio, so we are being broadcast all over the globe, and we consider it a huge privilege to be able to spend time with you each and every day. We have a huge workshop coming up in New York City that you can go on to lifecoachradionetworks.com and find out more about that event. Also, upcoming on Life Coach Radio Networks tomorrow at 12 o'clock, you can tune in and listen to Coach Mandy talk about training your brain and upping your game. Also on the 10th, you can join Reverend Jen as she heard the title of her show is Spiritually Speaking. And so you can talk with her at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Also on the 11th, you can join Coach Jeff as he explores entrepreneurship and fun to fortune at 12 o'clock. I will also be back on Life Coach Radio Networks on February the 20th, and I am going to be joined, I am super excited to be joined by Georgia Schaefer, and she has authored several books. She is also a coach, and we're going to be chatting about the 12 relationship mistakes that women make. So I'm really excited to have her on with me, and that will be at 11 a.m. Mountain Time on February the 20th. So again, a number you can call in if you would like to chat with Rebecca Valle or myself, Leanne Parsons, the Walk Your Talk Coach, is 646-716-9397. All right, Rebecca, thank you so much again for joining us. If those of you who are just tuning in to Walk Your Talk with Leanne, I am joined by Rebecca Valle today and very privileged to have you on air with me today, Rebecca. And so I kind of threw a deep question at you, but I am really curious if you would like to share with our listeners what was the trigger that you really experienced that led you to the path of personal healing for yourself so you could show up for your kiddos in a way that brought dignity to yourself as well as to them.
Sure. I'm glad you gave me some thought time because I have lots of triggers. I think the main turning point for me was we had my son home, my daughter home. I was a mom. I had all the props, doing my bunny ears again, you know, to be the mom, the boy and the girl and the house and the husband and the, you know, and yet I really still found myself really bitter towards pregnant women. That sounds so random. Mm-hmm. I always joke in my classes I wanted to kick them because there was such a just kind of a callous attitude towards their pregnancy, their complaining. At the time, I was teaching some classes with women that were pregnant, and it was so it still hurt so much to hear them talk about, you know, complaining about their swollen ankles, and I was like, I would kill for swollen ankles, you know, and the bonding mm-hmm. I saw with husband and wife, and, you know, I always joke I had this fantasy that if we would have been pregnant and I would have gotten pregnant, he rubs your feet and he brings you ice cream at all hours, and, you know, there's this whole fantasy world that goes with going through pregnancy with your husband. So I actually went into my pastor and I was like, so when am I going to stop feeling like this? And he really, I think, at the first time really said, well, that's grief, you know, and grief's going to cycle around and it's going to cycle back up for you your whole life. And he was absolutely right. I mean, absolutely. There are still times here 16 years later where I grieve my child and my husband's child and that's okay. And that mm-hmm. I needed to acknowledge that. And it was actually very shortly after that we met Joe's mom at the time, and we going through the whole pregnancy together was very healing for me. And it was as if I was pregnant. So, I mean, there was some real healing that took place there. But it was the first time I really realized it's really not about having kids in your house that heal that issue for your heart. And then over the past years, what God's really made clear to me is that they can't replace that child for me, and I can't replace their birth parents. And I think going at this relationship with them as if I have to be good enough to fill that void for them, that's a lot of pressure on me, and that's an expectation that's not fair to them. And so, you know, a good friend of mine that she actually lost her husband years ago, and she, it was horrible, walked through that loss with her, and now she's remarried, has an amazing new husband, but she still has grief days. She still misses her husband that she had before her current husband. And I just realized watching her go through that my kids can, you know, they can love me and we can do well together and all that, but they're still going to have grief days. And it doesn't mean I'm any less of a mom, just like it doesn't mean he's any less of a husband, but there's a place mm-hmm. carved out in my friend's heart for her first husband, and there's a place in my children that has that's carved out for them, for their first parents. And we can't live our lives thinking we can redo one another, but we can acknowledge the grief days, and we can come alongside each other and know that there's going to be days they miss their parents, there's going to be days we miss the biological family we didn't have, and we're all in this together, and God's brought us together in that healing. But I think that really was the catalyst to realize that there was grief that I had to deal with, which has then allowed me to come alongside with my children, because I don't love them any less, and I know they don't love me any less, but we both have dealt with loss.
Absolutely, and that acknowledging and validating peace for each other brings such a sense mm-hmm. of humanity, right, and transparency and reality into the picture that oftentimes gets dismissed because you just should be this little perfect picture, and you should just be really happy right now, everybody. And, you know, that acknowledgement and validation piece of that grief is so beautiful, and it's so honoring to each person in the tapestry of adoption. I just, you know, because there are, everybody's got their story. Everybody has a banner that they hold up so high sometimes. You know, I often think just in my own life and the many people that I have been privileged to have conversation with in the tapestry of adoption, I am absolutely amazed at how similar our banners are and yet how different they really are. You know, we all kind of have the banner. Some of them are going to have tassels. Some are going to be ribbons. Some are going to be woven. Some are going to be tattered and torn. But we all have our banners. And those stories, that importance of being real acknowledged and validated for our feelings, our emotions, the different things that we go through is incredibly important and very, very empowering. And it allows us to really step into our true selves. Because I think so many times the layers that other people put on us, Rebecca, or that we put on ourselves, that does not represent us at all. And, you know, I think throughout the course of my life, I've had to learn to take off the things that didn't fit. You know, it's kind of like that really cool pair of jeans that you shop and shop and shop for and you finally get it right. And they really fit very, very well and you're comfortable in them. Those are the ones you want to wear. The ones that maybe are hand-me-downs, right, that, anyway, they're not your style. You don't want to wear them. And that's kind of the way it is with just really living an authentic life throughout the whole tapestry of adoption and really trying to identify who we really are at the core. You know, and that's so much of the work that I do. And I just, you know, I'm so privileged to be able to walk alongside so many women, boomers on down, you know, that have really been touched by this and really are done. They're absolutely done, Rebecca, with wearing everybody else's clothes.
I don't ever want that for my kids. I don't ever want them to say, well, growing up I had to be XYZ, but now that I'm, you know, 18, that's one of the reasons that I believe so strongly in having information available for them for their lifetime. You know, this idea that at 18 something magical happens and they should take in all this information about their identity and, you know, when they're quote-unquote ready, I'm like, okay, I was a hot mess at 18. Don't be throwing me new identity information at 18, you know. So I really want to come alongside them and help them make sense of who they are their whole life and helping them build that. I often use the analogy of that brick wall, you know, that each year they're laying their bricks down for that year. My daughter's putting her 15-year bricks down right now, and interwoven in her mortar is the fact that she's adopted and what she thinks about that right now and what it looks like for her and all the way up till 18. But I think it would be so hard if I just never addressed it. It would be easier for me. Don't get me wrong. It's tempting. But if I never addressed adoption loss and identity and them making sense of their story, then at 18, their wall would have all these gaps. It's this like elephant in the middle of the room that no one really wants to go there because it's just too hard. And then they have to rebuild their wall from scratch. So I think I feel so strongly about, you know, if if parents are afraid to have conversations with their kids about adoption, it's probably their stuff. Like, they need to ask themselves, what is it that makes me uncomfortable? I've shared the story before on my show about with one of my kiddos. We were walking through Target, and all of a sudden they just said, you know, sometimes I really miss her. And I was like, and I knew exactly who they were talking about. And I was like, wow, tell me about that. And like, well, when things are really hard and I'm really sad, I really miss her. And I was like, yeah, I totally get that. I totally can see that. And then they were like, I love you, Mom. And I was like, I love you too, bud. You know, and it was just like this natural conversation that could happen in Target, that he wasn't afraid that I was going to be like, what do you mean you miss her? I'm not enough, you know, because then that's about me. That's not about my kiddo and his and their story. So I think for parents that are afraid to go there, they don't want to talk about loss, or they don't want to sit with their child while they cry about their first parents. Like, you have to stop and ask yourself, what is it triggering in me? Because I'm probably trying to be something I cannot fill that spot. I'm trying to be that parent that's good enough that she won't miss them or he won't miss them. And you can't. I mean, it's a place carved in their heart that we don't fit, and that's okay. But then we have to help them make sense of that.
Absolutely, and it is okay. And, you know, really checking our own hearts is such a huge thing, whether you're the kiddo or the parent. It's like, what is my motive here? And what am I, why am I really in this game of life? And
how do
I really want to show up for my kids? And that passion, and I hear it coming through in your voice, Rebecca, the passion and the love, the unending, sacrificial, and just really unconditional love that you have for your kiddos and the self-acceptance that you've given yourself. You've given yourself permission to grieve, and you've given yourself permission to be fully there for your kids. And you know, really set aside all that fear.
Yeah.
No, and you know, none of us are, but it really comes across in what you're saying. It does, and it is a process. It's a journey that you're choosing to walk, though, and that intimacy that you can have with your kiddos. That's a whole new level that you are able to bring into their lives, and as well as teaching others. So please share with us some of the programs that you have at Parker Ed Venice. Yeah, and what your mission is. And where have you seen your program grow in the last few years? And where would you like to see it go? So that was, I stacked a lot on there, but, you know, we have like less than 15 minutes left, which is kind of crazy how fast it's gone. And so I would love for you to share with us, because I think Parker Hospital is very, very unique in this, and it intrigues me and totally gets me really excited when I think about the programs that you have going on. So please share with us.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to. So the Family to Family Adoption Support Program was really, it really was started thinking that I would just be there, be at the hospital. I kind of joke, wedding coordinator for adoptions, you know, help the adoptive family, help the patient, make sure everybody has what they need, just to help it go smoothly, because it's so complex. There's so many parties involved. I often say, you know, we didn't need this with closed adoption, because the model was the baby was born, went to the social worker, went to the family, woman was told to forget it. We know that is not possible. It did not end well, and it cannot, I mean, we look at that model of care in the hospital, and there's really very little to nothing that we should salvage from that. And so knowing now with openness, having multiple people at times at the hospital, sometimes the adoptive families are invited there by the patient, sometimes not, you know, it's totally up to her. But just realizing that with that complexity, you have to empower your nurses. The more I looked into this, I was hearing stories from adoptive families, and they would say, oh, you know, we did a delivery at this, we did our placement at this hospital, and it was amazing. And, you know, that would be on Tuesday. And then on Friday, I'd get a call from a family, and they were like, oh, my gosh, we were at this hospital, and it was terrible, and this is how they treated the mom. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's the same hospital. And, you know, it really came down to the fact that when I talked to the nurses, they were like, well, taught us. No one's told us how to handle this. Like, there's no training that addresses specifically care at the bedside for these women. And with the changes in adoption, there has to be changes in practice. And so I think raising that bar in the hospitals to say, you know, one, every nurse should have an understanding of current practice and the legal implications of adoption. Every patient should know that she's being cared for by nurses that are compassionate but neutral, that they're not going to push her towards adoption or away from adoption. You know, really, when we don't train nurses and doctors, we're we're giving them the message that whatever opinions and tactics they come in with, it's okay because there's really not a standard of care. And I think we have to raise the bar and say, there needs to be a standard of care. There needs to be appropriate language, appropriate resources, a resource person that is there for that patient for whatever her needs are. And it's hard because I hear from agencies and whatnot, they'll say, well, it's so much better than it used to be. And I'm like, yes, but the stories are still happening. I'm still hearing people mm-hmm. that are, and the feeling of the staff to say, this does not feel good that we don't know how to manage the situation and how to be helpful and be a resource for the patient, for the families. And so over the years, it started out just being that little time in the hospital, and now we have four parts to our program. So we work with families considering adoption, and you can bet that first class I have with them, I talk about dealing with their stuff and their grief and their loss. Mm. And it can't be about filling that crib, and I share my own testimony to how much my heart's changed and really understanding the loss that this child and this woman will be a part of in this story. And then we also work with women facing unplanned pregnancy. So we have the ability to give resources about adoption, but also to make sure, is she getting prenatal care? Even if she's just kind of thought about adoption, we also can make sure she's getting parenting resources early in her pregnancy so she's not making a knee-jerk reaction at the hospital at 40 weeks. Well, I can't do it. I don't have the ability, so I'll just do adoption. And it's like, whoa, let's slow down. So it's really given us weeks and months to come alongside women that are maybe considering adoption, but maybe just needing resources to parent. And we don't want it to be something she feels cornered to do, whether it's adoption or parenting. So, and then if they are choosing an adoption plan, they can take childbirth classes at Parker so that they feel comfortable about the birth of their child. And the adoptive families can take baby care classes and CPR class. We have a new infant massage class for helping with bonding and whatnot. And then not only the hospital time, which I'd love to talk more about as well, but also post-adoption resources, because it's going to be down the line that these families need support, and we absolutely know that birth parents are not getting the post-adoption support that they need. And so if their agency closes, or maybe they don't feel comfortable going back to their agency, can they get in contact with the hospital to say, do you know of counseling resources? Because the day that baby was born and she chose adoption, her life changed forever. It is a life-changing moment. And to belittle that or act like that wasn't life-changing for her and the child and the adoptive family, that's where we get into the idea that, we're just filling the crib. It's that day is pivotal. And we have to acknowledge the loss that woman has gone through and make sure she has support and she wasn't just the one that, she was so brave to give this child to the family. It's not okay to belittle that piece as well. So now there's four parts. We do the considering adoption, preparing for the adoption, the hospital time, and then the post-adoption support. And our hope Amazing. Is obviously that this would be in every hospital, that every hospital should have the expectation that they have a family-to-family program, that they're there to support the patient and to help things go smoothly, and that families are getting resources from beginning to end, and we can undergird it with neutral, compassionate care.
Absolutely. So incredibly important. And I am just like jumping up and down. My whole heart is just leaping as I'm hearing you share, because we share such a vision. My dream would be that every family touched by the tapestry of adoption has the support network around them and they understand these issues that they could be walking through, and that they get the love and care and attention and be able to walk through this with dignity, in such a way that it changes the language and it changes the whole view of the adoption process in this country and in this world. It's so incredibly important that we acknowledge and validate every role and that we don't dismiss anybody's heart in the process. This is a really big deal. And it's a 24/7 issue that I think people dismiss. Rebecca, the people that I have definitely had the privilege of having conversation with, they tend to forget that adoption is a 24/7. We're, totally. Those of us who have been adopted, we're always adopted, kiddos, no matter our age or not. It's part of our story. And every first mom, every adoptive, all the families that are involved in that tapestry, they have a story, and that story is incredibly important. And that story needs to be
acknowledged. It needs to be validated. It needs to be honored. It needs to be protected. And it needs to be cherished and appreciated for what it is. And,
yeah.
You know, when you talk about the education piece in the hospitals, I just love that. And that is a dream of mine as well, because guess what? Just like you and I came into our stories with baggage, with pride,
sure.
with ego.
I'm
with
sure we
all
have that.
That. Guess what? All the doctors and nurses do too. They all have their preconceived ideas, right, about what how the situation should go or what it should look like because of their past experience.
And
how amazing would it be, Rebecca, if we could teach everyone to go ahead and set aside their judgments and prejudices and the different issues that they have to really fully care for the families that are, you know, touched and interwoven together during this journey.
Yeah.
And
that's
you know,
what they
whatever.
Want. Yeah, that's what they want.
The
nurses are like, oh, my gosh, teach me how to do this. Like, I really want to be able to come beside this patient and alongside the families and not feel awkward because someone has taught me how to do this. And that's really what we're hoping to do. We have a two-day seminar and curriculum that we've written that really we walk through nurses and social workers and say, okay, what do you come in with? Let's look at that baggage. Where did that come from? And then what is current practice and what does current care look like for these families? And they're just so glad when they leave because they're like, we've not liked not knowing. It's not comfortable to us not knowing how to care for these families.
Right. And a lot of that silence that comes up is because of that uncomfortable feeling. You know, nobody likes, just like with, you know, different diseases, cancer, whatever. If you don't know what to say or how to walk into the situation, you're going to run away from it. And, you know, it sounds like you, your family, Parker Hospital has embraced this notion of, you know, really running toward the families involved in the tapestry of adoption instead of running away from them. And
I love what you just said. Yeah, I love what you just said, too, because you said, you know, in their words, like people with cancer, and everything about Parker's program was crafted from the words of the patients and the families and saying, you know, we'd come in and say, how did it go? This happened. And we're like, oh, we got to change that, you know, and they gave us insight, just like the heart of an adoptee. They gave us insight. If I'm a patient in this position, this is helpful. This is not. This was, you know, I would have loved this, but this did not work for me, you know, and that's really how the whole program was crafted, was from the voices of those involved. And heaven forbid we stop listening to the voices of those involved.
That's what I was just going to say is, you know, congratulations on being curious, not being afraid to listen, and opening up at Parker Hospital and within your ministry, Rebecca, the freedom and the safe place for people to come and really share their hearts, because that's what's going to change this world, and that's what's going to change the whole language of adoption and the way we do it today, is by people having the courage to share and those of us that are in the helping industry being curious enough and open enough and willing to keep an open hand to them and whatever lies ahead for them, right? Realizing that we can be there to support and encourage each other, because it is a lifelong path. The issues that a two-year-old is going to have with their adoption is going to continue to change as they head in, and they're 52, 62. Every step along the way is going to offer up new opportunities and possibilities and challenges for each one of us. And, I just love that our hearts are joined together in this, and I really do look forward to really just the future with you and really changing this world and the way we do adoption and the way that we bring dignity into the lives, again, of everybody touched within the tapestry. Those threads do not need to be tattered, torn, and ripped to pieces, right? They can be approached with dignity and healing. And, you know, there is a different way to do this.
Well, and I want to thank your listeners, because I think we can talk all day long about giving those involved in adoption voice, but we have to have people that are willing to hear and willing to listen and willing to change their perspective and have a shift in paradigm and say, I want them to have a voice, but I also want them to teach me with that voice. And so I think we have to continue to pray for society to be open to hear those voices and to change our perspective and really give them value, not just, oh, it's good they have a voice, but we're really willing to embrace what they say.
Right. because we have to honor that. It's real and it's valid, and it's extremely important and one that should not ever be silenced again.
Yes.
So thank you for that, Rebecca. And please share with our listeners, if they want to know more about Parker Hospital or how to get in touch with the programs there, please share with us your contact information.
Sure. Well, you can check out our website, parkerhospital.org/adoption support. Then we have a YouTube page, which is Adoption Perspectives, which has archived radio shows. We have two Facebook pages, Family to Family Adoption Support Program, as well as Adoption Perspectives radio show. And I get the messages off those. People can totally reach out and give me information and insight as far as what they heard today and anything they'd like to add or questions they have about our program and how to bring it to their hospital. Because that's our hope, that the voices will rise up and say, we have to raise the bar in how women are cared for in hospitals.
Oh, absolutely. I love that, Rebecca. And, you know, as a coach with a huge heart in this arena, I look forward to learning from you and really being able to discover and reveal the different ways that I can be of service and really help you on your mission. I just love our connected hearts on that. And again, I am Leanne Parsons, the Walk Your Talk coach. I love having people on my program on a regular basis who really do walk their talk. And Rebecca, I am so honored. You are walking so boldly with so much dignity and love and care within the adoption arena. And I am very, very privileged that you chose to come on my show and share your heart so authentically and honestly and transparently. And I wish you all the best success at Parker Hospital and your Family to Family program. And I look forward to the day where we meet face to face.
Thank you so much for having me today, Leanne. It's been an honor.
Absolutely. You can reach me at 505-412-1817. I also am going to be unleashing a huge new website, so be looking out for that. You will be able to find it at Voice of the Adoptee or Adoptee's Voice. We're still working on the exact domain for that, but I'm super excited. It should be out here within the next couple of weeks. I am on Life Coach Radio Network twice every month at a minimum, and I look forward to the next time that we are together. Have a beautiful day. Love honestly and genuinely. Hug those close to you, and let's make an impact in 2014 that the ripple effect will go on for generations to come.